The National Weather Service can pinpoint now the exact location of where a storm might hit and send emergency messages to the people who might be affected directly to those people's cell phones. Mike Gerber is a meteorologist at the National Weather Service and a member of the Wireless Emergency Alerts Team. He and three of his colleagues are finalists for a Service to America medal in the Homeland Security and Law Enforcement category. Mike, congratulations to you. Name your colleagues so we don't forget them. If I wait, I'll forget. So please tell us who your colleagues are that are also chosen.
Yeah, I appreciate that opportunity. Mark Paisi, Gregory Zwicker, and Bob Bungie, all employees of NOAA and the National Weather Service.
The profile that the Partnership for Public Service provides of the work that you and your team have done say that you've transmitted more than 15,000 warnings since 2012 for the most dangerous types of weather. Was this a no-brainer when you decided to go about doing it, providing a service where people could receive texts about potentially dangerous weather situations? Or was there a process here to get something like this up and going?
Yeah, actually, there's really a story behind it, and it really dates all the way back to 2005. I think maybe the first thing to do is talk about what the service is. You know, this is what we've done is we've made it possible for the National Weather Service to quickly push geo-targeted alerts for tornado warnings, flash flood warnings, and other critical weather events to millions of cell phones via this new service that we're talking about, wireless emergency alerts. And as a result, many lives have been saved. Now, there's sort of a technical and leadership perspective behind it. Technically, what we did is we developed some software which went in and grabs the alerts, such as flash floods, tornado warnings, from our complex stream of warning information that we have at the National Weather Service. And we push that to FEMA's Integrated Public Alert and Warning System. And from there, it goes out to the wireless carriers who broadcast those alerts from cell towers within the threat area. So the idea being that if you are inside the threat area, you receive the alert. And what's beneficial about this kind of service is it's actually done by cell broadcast technology. So this is not, these 90-character messages that you receive are not the same kind of thing you would receive when you're getting a traditional text message. The point being here that because it is a radio-like broadcast that's reaching your phone, the alerts are not subject to the kind of congestion that could be experienced if they had been transmitted like a text message, where when networks get congested there due to some kind of major event, then you could have that congestion. So this is something that we're able to avoid, and it's a unique service.
When I first read this profile, my mind went immediately to Snowmageddon, which was, 2011, I think.
Right, right.
And I was driving home. I supposedly lucked out, according to my friends and colleagues, because it only took me 2.5 hours to get home that night. In what, we had 2 feet of snow in 5 seconds or something. I don't remember what the particulars were, but it was a once-in-a-lifetime type storm, thankfully. And I recall trying to, because I was stopped many times and not moving, to call or text home to let my family know what my progress was or wasn't. And remember, on many occasions, was not able to do it because of the very congestion issue that you mentioned. So that's where my mind went right away, was that advantage of this service not being dependent on factors like that.
That's right. And I think something that you're pointing to is very important as well, and that this service is actually not intended to replace any other types of alerting systems. In fact, what social science tells us is that, unfortunately, people do not always take that life-saving, decisive, responsive action until they've received the alert from multiple trusted sources. So we at the National Weather Service view this system as one of the tools that's part of our nation's larger a warning system, if you will.
The profile says that you played a critical role in making sure the right kinds of weather alerts would be available and properly transmitted, and credited with persuading wireless carriers to make the needed investments that improved geographical targeting. What made that persuasion successful in your mind, Mike? What was the pitch that was most successful in dealing with the carriers?
Well, I think in working with wireless industry, and this really applies, you know, working with any group of people, I think, of course, you've got to demonstrate passion, but you've got to build trust and credibility with your partners. I think in this particular case, and working with wireless industry, I think they're more accustomed, historically, to working with regulators such as the Federal Communications Commission. And the National Weather Service, you know, our mission is the protection of life and property. And so we're out to kind of do the right thing, if you will. And one of the things I think that we talked about as we started some of these efforts is maybe an understanding that, you know, the general public is, they're all our customers, albeit for different reasons. And, you know, safety is certainly a very noble effort.
Michael Gerber's...
So communicating with people, building that trust and credibility is something that was really critical.
Michael Gerber's a meteorologist at the National Weather Service. He and three of his colleagues are finalists for a Service to America Medal in the Homeland Security and Law Enforcement category. Was that a tough pull? Was it difficult to convince the wireless providers that this is something they should cooperate? Because it did involve them spending some money.
Well, you know, there's actually, you know, all of this effort, to be honest with you, goes back to 2005, when a gentleman by the name of Mark Paisi, who I mentioned earlier, who's now actually the deputy director of NOAA's satellite division, testified before Congress and drafted Executive Order 13407, which was eventually signed by President Bush, and that called for an integrated public alert and warning system, which you could say ultimately led to wireless emergency alerts. Now, when I talk about an integrated public alert and warning system, or IPAWS, and FEMA now runs that, you know, what is an IPAWS? And essentially what we're seeing is that here it's a system where emergency alerting officials, such as us at NOAA's National Weather Service or state, local emergency management officials, everybody can generate an alert, but that we do it in common format, a common alerting protocol format, an industry standard for the exchange of alert information, and that we funnel it to one place, an alerts aggregator, that FEMA integrated public alert and warning system. And from there, then, it would go out through many communication channels. So not only to wireless emergency alerts, but also to the emergency alert system, to highway road signs, to mobile application developers, to news and media outlets, and so forth. So when wireless emergency alerts rolled out in 2012, we were very strong advocate, if you will, amongst the various partners and working with our partners, advocating for improvements to the geographical targeting, because we want to make sure that everybody wants to make sure that those alerts are most relevant when you get that alert in your pocket. And some of those results have come to fruition, but we also want to see other things like increasing the message length, because right now you get the wireless emergency alert and it's limited to 90 characters. There's only so much you can say with it. So we've been working toward with our partners to expand that, and also to provide additional means for people to convey the information to people. It would be great if we could include, let's say, a map of a threat area along with the recipient's location. In fact, the Department of Homeland Security has granted out several million dollars research monies to investigate how we can improve this mobile alerting for wireless emergency alerts. And one of the outcomes of that showed that by having that high information map, people are more likely to take that decisive life-saving action. And that's the bottom line, is does the individual, when they receive the alert, take that life-saving action? That's the bottom line. That's the goal.
Mike, of all of the information that's included in the profile about how this all had to go and all of the discussions that we've had about it so far, it strikes me that the most difficult part was connecting the extraction of the alerts to the system. The other part, and I don't mean to minimize the other parts of it because I'm not suggesting any of it was simple, but it seems to me that porting that infrastructure that you had in place already at the National Weather Service to the system that's going to get the information out to where it's supposed to go was probably your toughest pull. Is that a fair assumption on my part?
Well, I think what it was is fortunately something that we were able to do in a cost-effective fashion, because one of the things that we'd like to do is leverage and build on other efforts, and we were able to do that. So, you know, what we did is we worked internally within the organization. We've got over 122 National Weather Service field offices who are the ones who actually pull the trigger on these alerts, and we met with representatives from our six regions, and that's how we came to agreement on what were the most critical alerts. What were we going to push across to FEMA IPAWS and onto wireless carriers so that alert goes off in your pocket? And through that work, we were able to then apply the technology to push the alerts to FEMA IPAWS. And it definitely had some challenges, but I think, you know, that's one key piece of it. But working and collaborating with such a diverse group of people from across industry and federal government, academia, lawyers, engineers, scientists, researchers, and emergency managers and so forth, probably the most challenging part of this effort.